Do you or someone you love wish you had a better job? Want to be happier on your current job? Don't even have a job? Welcome to Work with Marty Nemko.
A few weeks ago, I invited listeners to the show to email me if they thought they had a career story that my listeners would benefit from, maybe even enjoy. Well, last week I interviewed one of them. His name was Brian Jones. He's a guy who lived in 19 foster homes. He was homeless. He worked on menial temp construction jobs and desperately wanted stable government work. Finally got one as a locksmith for the San Francisco Unified School District. And then he got laid off. And now he's the accidental entrepreneur forced to make a living as a self-employed locksmith. Sort of getting by, but it's a real-life story. And that's what I kind of liked. I like this idea of, you know, so often on talk shows you have the what I call the Oprah syndrome. You get somebody, yes, who started out in East Oakland from poverty and now is making zillions and all that. But that's not the real world. For every one of those, there are 10,000 people who are not. So I like the idea of asking, not cherry-pick people like that, those one in a million, but simply asking KALW listeners who have real-life, real stories to come and tell their truth. And so I decided to continue the process. So I have another guest who is a KALW listener this morning, and let me introduce her. Most people feel that to get more than a menial job, you need a college degree. Well, my guest has had 10 professional careers and no degree. She's here to tell us her experience in preparing for and being in those careers, her successes, her failures, what she would do differently, what she'd do the same, and most importantly, the non-Oprah-like truth. Linda Seabright, welcome to Work with Marty Nemko.
Marty, thank you so much.
Well, most people are scared to apply for jobs in which most people have degrees. Why do you think you're different, honestly?
Honestly, I've always felt less than because I didn't have a degree. So it made me not work that much harder, but maybe project myself that much more and try harder than the next person to succeed at what I was doing in whatever position I was.
Let's take them one at a time. Let's go. What was your first professional career out of high school?
Out of high school, I worked in a clothing boutique.
Okay, let's go. Those are jobs you can get, you know, without a degree.
Okay.
But what was the first job that you ever had where most people in the field had a degree?
Graphic design.
Tell me about that.
I started working in Brooklyn at a newspaper called the Brooklyn Phoenix, and I was the receptionist for $60 a week. Mm-hmm. I found the putting together of the paper fascinating, how they did it. You know, this is the old-fashioned way, cutting and pasting up.
So You're old.
I'm old. We're old. God bless us. And
yes.
I don't
guilty
say,
as charged.
I don't
yes,
say
yes, yes.
No.
We're,
I didn't mean
we're of the same vintage. Yes. Okay.
So the cutting and the pasting up, I found fascinating. Plus, I had a crush on the editor, mm-hmm. So I would stay late, learn how to do it, went out with the editor, and
that. So the answer is sleep with the boss is the key to getting your professional
exactly.
employment.
Exactly. Thank you. That's it. End of interview.
You know, actually, truthfully, seriously, studies show that 64% of women who sleep with their bosses have their careers advanced as a result. Does that surprise you?
Yes, actually it does. And I think that's an interesting statistic.
Okay. So, but in that case, really, was that really what enabled you?
Not sleeping with the boss.
Okay.
No, just
okay.
Learning
I,
the,
okay.
The...
I didn't know you were joking. You know, I was joking, half joking and half joking. So, really, so most people who don't sleep with the boss, when they start out as a receptionist, can be there for 50 years and not move up to the professional level job. What non-obvious thing, if you recall, I know it's been a while, but what non-obvious thing did you do that enabled you to go from be that rare person who went from receptionist to professional graphic designer for a newspaper?
I was interested in doing it. I asked people questions. I watched them. And I think this is the thread that has carried me through my careers is watching people learning and then saying, I can do that, and then going to apply for a position and kind of fluffing up my experience and saying, well, I've kind of done that. Mm-hmm. And then the minute I start doing it, I could do it.
It's what I call hey you, meaning when you're in the workplace and you're trying to learn something from somebody, you say, hey you, can you explain this to me? Rather than going to state you, let alone private you.
Yes. Yes.
Okay. Take me to the next professional level job you had after graphic. Why'd you leave graphic design? Let's start with that.
Sure. Well, I rose to great heights. I think, as most people would agree, I worked for the New York Times.
Wow.
Yeah. And that
doesn't
was,
get higher.
No. And that was within a year of my starting out as receptionist.
You're kidding.
No. No.
Now, wait a minute.
If
within
not
a
less.
Year of starting out as a receptionist at the Brooklyn Phoenix?
Yeah. If not less.
I thought you said you took 16 years. Maybe I misheard you.
I was a graphic designer for many years, but within a year of working at the Brooklyn Phoenix, I was at the New York Times, yeah.
I see. So you were, but wait, so I'm confused. So you were a graphic designer before you got a job as a receptionist at the Brooklyn Phoenix? No.
No.
What was the sequence? How did you become a graphic designer?
Just how I told you. Just working as a receptionist, learning how to do pay stubs.
But not at the Brooklyn Phoenix.
Yeah. Learning it there, then starting freelancing at another Brooklyn newspaper. And then I was freelancing at a couple of ad agencies, and then I applied at the New York Times.
Okay. How did you get the job at the New York Times?
You know, I don't remember, honestly and truly.
Sure,
I
was it an ad, or was it networking?
It wasn't an ad, and it was not networking in the sense that I knew somebody. I think I might have just called. Back in those days, you could just do that. And I worked with Lou Silverstein, who would redesign the pages of the New York Times. And I would go in there, and he would smoke a cigar and say, "What do you think? What do you think?" And I'd go, "Well, I don't know, Lou." He says, "How can you decide so quickly?" And then he would change it, you know. Or then he'd have me move things in micro hair. It was fantastic.
Mm-hmm. You know, while calling often doesn't work, and I'm reluctant to tell a mass audience like this, go and cold call employers. The studies show that actually works really well even today. Not so much an email, because that's impersonal. Those are bits and bytes. But if you call and leave good voicemail, there is a good chance that today, if you not one, but if you contact your 20 or 30 dream employers, leaving great voicemail that conveys that you are smart, experienced, aggressive, assertive without being aggressive, and a little playful, because everybody's so exhausted and working so hard, we want somebody who seems fun.
Yeah, yeah. And don't you think that if you call and leave a message like that and then follow it up with a resume,
yes,
and email, then they'll go, "Oh, wow, that woman, that guy, oh, yeah." And
person.
The name, clicks.
As follow-through person, I even recommend making a third follow-up, which is, let's say you leave the great voicemail, you send your portfolio. A week later, you haven't heard, and you then say, "I certainly don't want to be a pest. I'm assuming not having heard from you, you're not interested. But I know how things can fall between the cracks, so I'm taking the liberty of calling one more time. I swear I won't call again if you don't return my call, but I would love to talk with you, Mr. Silverstein or Lou or whatever, because I think I might be able to be very helpful to you. Give
exactly.
me a call if you feel like it." That can often be, that third one, that sign of persistence, can often be the tipper that makes it work. Okay, so why'd you had the dream job, graphic designer, New York Times. What happened?
I was, working at the New York Times, and then I met my ex-husband, and he wanted to move back to California. I was from back east originally, not New York, but I grew up in California, so he wanted to move to California, so we left.
So was this the classic stupid thing? You left the greatest job in the world for a guy?
I don't say that it was the classic stupid thing, because I came here and started working for the San Francisco Examiner. So okay. That was equally wonderful.
So you had the job coming here?
I didn't have the job coming here. No. I did
so
the same thing.
So you had the guts to quit?
Yeah.
And quit the New York Times without a job, came to San Francisco and got a job?
The thing about me, Marty, is that I've always freelanced. Okay, so except for working at the New York Times and a couple of other long-term positions, I've always freelanced. I've always felt comfortable in my ability to get a job anywhere. So when I left New York, I had no doubt that when I came here, I could freelance. And that's what I did. I started working again at ad agencies, design agencies, and then got the job at the San Francisco Examiner. And then I got pregnant, and then the recession happened in the 90s, and I looked for other work. And then I went on to my other career as an accountant.
Okay, we get to accountant in a minute. Now, most people are afraid they'll never get another job. That's why they don't quit. They stay in crappy jobs. They won't quit their job because they know they feel, especially in this unprecedentedly bad economy. Listeners, don't get seduced by the, quote, declining unemployment rate. Ask yourself, how many people do you know who are getting good jobs these days easily? Nobody knows anybody. It's really, the number, when people are getting jobs, they're getting jobs at lower pay or more odious work in general, unless you're a superstar. So it is really hard. And yet you feel and probably felt and probably still feel, if you were looking for a job, that you could talk your way into pretty much any job. Is that correct?
That's correct.
What enables you to do that?
Well, even though now I don't have the college degree, or still don't have the college degree, now I have this breadth of experience, so that if they say degree required, I read that as I can substitute all my experience for that.
Now, again, what your can I say your age? You're 58. And most people 58 are additionally scared. They think the first word out of every client's mouth who comes to me who's over 50 is, I'm worried about age discrimination. Age discrimination, age discrimination. You're 58. That doesn't make you feel not confident. How can you at 58, no college degree, and in new fields, because like you say, we're now going to talk about counting, and that you can go into not only get another job, but in a new field. What gives you that hubris?
My personality? My smarts, my ability to make a learning curve very short. I don't know. I truly don't know.
Let me try to take a shot at my listeners who are not that bubbly in personality, who don't consider themselves the sharpest tool in the shed, what would I tell them? And let's say they're introverts, unlike you. I would tell them that introverts can also get hired. You do need to do it in your quieter way. You need to, for example, have an ongoing opportunity to meet with potential employers. And the way you do that is by taking continuing education classes in your field. And little by little, you're sitting there and perhaps making an occasional good comment, or you join a study group. You perhaps ask somebody else a question. An ongoing relationship may be the best way for somebody who's an introvert, especially if they're older, and especially if they're trying to get into a new field to get a job. As an extrovert, you probably can't respond that well to that, but does that resonate with you? Does that
It does, right? And it reminds me, Marty, also of something else that I feel is very valuable, and that is volunteering somewhere.
Definitely.
So if you're fascinated with graphic design and you want to see what it looks like at an ad agency, but you don't have the resources or the time to go and get, maybe you can devote a few hours to go do an internship. Of course, sometimes they want college kids, but sometimes they don't.
Good sense. Makes sense.
You know?
You're listening to The Work with Marty Nemko. My guest is Linda Seabright. She is a person who responded to my request a few weeks ago on this show. For any KALW listener who thought they had an interesting career story, to email me, and she has. And we've talked so far about how she went from without a kind, and the interesting thing about her, at least an interesting thing, is that she's had 10 different professional careers and no college degree. And she's talking about, to this point, she's talked about how she's been a graphic designer mainly. And then she made a transition into accounting.
Yikes.
How the heck did you do that?
I don't know, you know, but God bless accounting because it has been my mainstay. When the recession hit and I was doing graphic design, I was kind of desperate because the freelance dried up.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I had left the Examiner. And so I thought, well, I'll just take a job. I wanted to be an artist, you know. So
right. Graphic, you are an artist.
I am an artist.
Your personality, you are an artist.
Right. So I wanted to stay with that, but I had to take a job at an office. I was an office person. It's kind of an office manager, but glorified, let's say.
Mm-hmm.
And then I found it wasn't that bad. I worked there about a year, and I started helping people in their home offices, you know, helping them tidy up their home offices. But then they wanted bookkeeping. So I thought, well, I can maybe help them with their books. I don't know how.
Mm-hmm.
And I got a job, and I got a job doing QuickBooks. I didn't even know how to do QuickBooks. Mm-hmm. In those
How'd you get somebody to hire you to do QuickBooks when you didn't know QuickBooks?
I don't know, Marty.
Take a moment.
Okay.
Think about it.
I was working, helping these people in their home offices. And I heard about QuickBooks, and I went online, and I started fooling around with it. I knew somebody who needed some help with their books in a real office. So I said, yes, I know QuickBooks. So this is always my typical thing, right? Mm-hmm. I don't really know it, but I say I do.
Mm-hmm.
I go in there. I make a few mistakes. I fix them. Now, lo and behold, I'm doing QuickBooks. I mean, I remember what the CPA told me. He said, you're not supposed to do this. And I had been doing it wrong for like a week.
Mm-hmm.
So you fix it. And it's not the end of the world. People are generous.
So what's very interesting about what you're saying is it is an ethical borderline situation. Do you BS your way into a job and say, I can do X when you can't? But if you are smart enough, even though you have BS'd your way into the job, if you know from past experience that sooner rather than later, you're going to add more value than some other more experienced candidate because you are a quicker learner, you are smarter, you are more fun to be with, that the relatively white lie enables it. It's actually can be ethical because the net result is the employer gets somebody maybe better than he or she otherwise would have gotten. Do you buy that analysis, or am I rationalizing?
Well, I hope you're not rationalizing, but that's the analysis that I would prefer rather than the rationalizing.
Okay, so you've made most of your living freelancing predominantly as an accountant, but you said you've had 10 different professional careers. Tell me another one you had. You went from graphic designer to accountant. What was another professional career, and how the heck did you get into that?
Well, say along the same lines, I was doing accounting, and let's take legal secretary, for example. A friend of mine who worked for Price Waterhouse mm-hmm. said that she knew an estate planner, an estate attorney, one of the highest, biggest ones in San Francisco, mm-hmm. a woman, who had just lost her bookkeeper and secretary. And she was very difficult to work for, and that's why. She ran through people like crazy. Mm-hmm. And she said, you know, this woman, she'll pay well, go work for her. And so I went into this woman at a woman's office, and I sort of charmed her, and I saw that she was a tough cookie, but I put on my tough hat as well.
You mirrored her.
I did. I mirrored her, and I met her right at her level, mm-hmm. and she would yell at me as I got the job. Just a few days a week, working in this huge law firm, doing legal secretary work and estate accounting for her estate clients. And she would yell at me, make me cry, but I hung in there, and it was an incredible experience.
So now that would seem like it had a lot of very specific. It's one thing to learn QuickBooks. It's one piece of software. A lot of people learn software on their own. But legal secretary, you would think you need to know a lot of legal stuff. Is that wrong?
No, you don't. They have paralegals for that. Mm. Legal secretary, you're typing. You're putting in that special paper, you know, that brief paper. It's easy. Marty, you could do it.
Even me. Okay. Is there one other career that you've had that's worth sharing with our listeners, or is it becoming redundant at this point to discuss those?
Well, you know, it's not so much that it's becoming redundant. I hope it's valuable. I think, is there one other career? No, I think that's about it,
okay.
Really.
Then let me ask you this question. If you were 18 now, would you go to college? For listeners who are just joining us, she's had all these different careers, never went to college.
I would, because, you know, I felt so insecure. I have felt so insecure that I've overcompensated, and I've always, like I said, felt less than.
So just for the psychological piece of it, except for that, let's say I injected a substance into your veins and it said, you have confidence, you delude yourself into thinking you have a college degree. Would you then not go to college?
Yes, no.
What would you do with the time between 18 and 22 if you were not going to college and you're 18 now? Where would you travel and why? Why would you do that?
I actually did. So I wouldn't change really anything. Because you can learn so much.
Is it really learning? Everybody says that, but you know, this gut feeling is
that, was cliche.
That it's pure pleasure.
You know, it is pure pleasure. It
you know,
is pure
this
pleasure.
This crap about, you know, oh, I learned experience different cultures. You know.
I know.
And I'm not sure that that's real. Is that real?
It's not real. I don't know why I said that. I take it back. Here's what I love about traveling. I'm a different person when I travel. I'm not impatient. I'm not cranky. I mean, I am if I don't sleep well. But I love the energy that I have when I'm traveling because, you know, I'll meet you on a bus in Hindustan and I'll talk to you. Whereas if I met you on a bus here on the Muni, I might not talk to you. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I'm more open.
Let me ask you one more question. I'm going to give you just a last softball question. We have 7,000 people roughly listening to this show right now, and most of them are not looking for a job, but many of them are looking to be more successful in their work. What one or two nuggets would you like to share that would benefit them? Actually, I have one more question after that. But
Okay. The one or two nuggets that I would share is absolutely do your homework ahead of time. If you want to go into a field that you haven't before because you think you'd be great at, you want to go into radio, you want to go into TV, do a little bit of homework around it. Don't just say, wow, it's glamorous, I want to do it. For a time, I wanted to be a music supervisor. I thought that'd be the coolest thing in the whole world.
What's a music supervisor?
Oh, that's the people who choose music for films and commercials.
Sure, that sounds great.
Right? Isn't that a great job? It's murder. It's incredibly hard to get into. It's terribly competitive and nepotistic. So within like a month, everybody had talked me out of it, and I don't want to do it. I talked myself out of it. Do your homework.
What kind? I mean, everybody knows you should do your homework before a career.
Okay, fine.
But what What is the Linda Seabright way of doing homework that may be cleverer than some people's version?
Talking to people about it.
How do you get people, you know, these days they have a phalanx of gatekeepers. How do you get to talk to people? Let's say I wanted to be a music supervisor. How would I go about getting to talk to people in this highly nepotistic competitive field?
Facebook and LinkedIn. Look up the companies that do it. Send an email. Like you were saying before, leave a wonderful message. Just want to talk to you.
What's your way of leaving a message? How would you, off the top of your head, what would be the voicemail you would leave? Say, you finally found on LinkedIn, I'm a music supervisor at Sony Pictures, and you're going to leave me the greatest voicemail you could. What would be the voicemail you'd leave me?
Hi, Marty. This is Linda Seabright. I know that you're very busy, but I wanted to talk to you for just a quick sec, if you'd be so kind to call me back, because I'm really interested in this field. I think I'd be really good at it. I have experience, and I just want to know a couple of quick things. And if you could call me, I'm going to send you an email to follow up, but I'd really appreciate chatting with you. Thanks so much, and here's my number.
Good job. Okay, now my last question. Remember at the top of the interview I said, I hate Oprah interviews because they cherry-pick one in a million who are went from dire poverty or misery or whatever and then is a zillionaire and is famous and all that stuff. And I said we were going to be fair and honest about things. You've had a bunch of different careers. You say thank God for accounting because that's how you're making most of your money. What is the truth about your life right now?
That I'm broke.
Tell me more.
That's it. I have not, because I've freelanced, I haven't paid a lot into Social Security. I have to pay my own medical insurance premiums. Let's not talk about that. I have an IRA with just a little bit of money in it. I've never had an employer 401k. I have not saved my money. I hope my mother isn't listening to this. She knows. I'm a little worried. And the age thing, does that worry me? No. The fact of health care and medical and premiums, yes.
And so, given that, it's scary to be broke. I want to ask you both at age 58 and at age 18, if you're starting again. At age 58, it is scary. Either do you have a plan? We talked about this off the air before a few minutes before we got the air. What is your plan, if anything, to change that? Or do you want us to do, like what I do with my regular listeners, as a listener to the show, would you like me to do what I call the 3-minute workover to try to see if we can come up with at least a baby step moving forward?
I would love that. And going back to 18, that's what I would have done differently, is not be spendthrift. Start saving my money at 18.
You told me off the air you spend a lot on clothes and on travel.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you would stop doing that. I agree. Those are not the paths to happiness, let alone security, short-term happiness. Okay, first of all, what I want to do is, I'm enjoying very much having you guest on my show, Linda. I really am.
Thank you.
So I'm going to, with your permission, I'm going to keep you a little longer.
Okay.
I'd like to give my listeners a chance to ask you a question or two. So, dear listeners, you are listening to Work with Marty Nemco. My guest is Linda Seabright. She is just a regular listener to KALW. Whom a few weeks ago I invited, over the air, I said, anybody who's got an interesting career story, please email me, and I may invite you on the show. So Linda was one of them, and what was interesting about her is she had a bunch of different professional careers with no college degree, but now she, in her candor, says she's broke. If you have a comment or a question for Linda, a comment, maybe the best comment in the world might be, hey, you'd like to hire her for, six figures, because she is bright and very personable, and she may be 58, but she's a very young 58. You can call in with your job offer or your job interview. You can interview her right here on the air.
Oh,
or if you've got a question for her, those are all good reasons to call here at Work with Marty. Now, because the phone number is 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. But while we're waiting for the calls to come, they're coming in already. But let's see what if we can do a 3-minute workover on you. So, at this point, your best skill is accounting in terms of marketability. Is
yes,
that correct?
Correct.
So despite all the protestations about shrinking government, and there is some, but still, government remains the bastion of job security, and the government hires a ton of accountants and type people. But you can't. So you'd rather have the job. She's made a huge face, a grimace. So you'd rather have the economic insecurity and work for the government. Is that correct?
Correct.
Okay. So, but am I correct in saying that the right job target for you would be accounting for the right employer?
Yes.
And is the right employer, because you're an artist, would it be a more arts-related organization? Not necessarily.
No, because I have found that even working, say, for a record label, it's just like working for an insurance company.
So who is the right employer for Linda Seabright for you to be doing accounting and provide stability and a solid income and benefits and all that stuff?
Not a startup.
Okay. So a mature company. So if you were you live in Marin, so it would be ideally, so you're not commuting that ridiculous commute. So you'd be working for Fireman's Fund in Novato or some other big, you know, you made a face. That's good. That's all right. So what are the bigger companies, the more mature company? Do you know them, or should you be, should your next stop after you get out of here today, after this radio show, should your next stop be at that beautiful Marin Frank Lloyd Wright-inspired library and ask the reference librarian for a directory of the larger companies that exist in Marin County?
No.
Okay, what should the next, who is, the, since you say a more mature company, what would be the next step for Linda to find a list of target employers and then use that great phone skills you have to talk your way into a permanent job?
You know, the kind of companies that I'm interested in now are micro-lending companies. I don't know why.
There's very few of them, and, you know, there is Kiva in San Francisco. There's a few of them. Let's go there. Let's say I said I want you to identify all the micro-lending companies, and they don't have to be based in the Bay Area because you can work remotely. If I said your job is to find all the micro-lending companies, speak to their CFO, the chief financial officer, do your great phone pitch that you do, and then and one out of the 20 will at least offer what I call a launch pad job, a chance for you to get in the door, and then once you're there, you do what Linda has done her whole life, to be bright and personable and clever and helpful to others and asking questions and try to inveigle yourself into their corporate ethos so much that you end up becoming beloved and they have to offer you a permanent job. If I said that's the plan, would you agree or disagree?
Yes, agree.
Let's go to the phones. Welcome to Work with Marty Nemco and Linda Seabright. It's your turn on the air. What's your question or comment for Linda?
Hello. Yes. Hi, Marty. Thanks. And love the show.
Thank you.
And love your guest.
Yeah, she's great.
I wanted to ask a follow-up to one of your questions, but I'm surprised you didn't ask, because you often say, you know, it's not necessarily the best thing for people to think about a college degree. I'd like to ask your guest if, because she only had a high school degree, if maybe that makes her more of a go-getter, somebody who is self-taught, and because they feel maybe deficient, that she actually works harder. And that's why she's been successful in all these different
Was the first thing she said on the top of the show. I guess you weren't hearing from the beginning, but go ahead.
Yes, that's exactly right. And I have always felt, as I said, less than and a little insecure because I didn't have that degree.
Yeah, I heard that part, but I'm wondering if you got a degree, if you wouldn't be quite that go-getter.
Oh, interesting.
Oh, I see. Turn it around. I'd be the go-getter. I'd be even more obnoxious about getting stuff. Then I'd like want to be president or something.
Interesting.
I'd probably be vice president. Oh, I'd be like Sarah Palin. God.
Interesting question. Thanks a lot for the call.
Thank you.
I'll give out the phone number again. If you have a question or a comment for Linda Seabright, especially if you want to offer her a job. You know, I just met her, but I like her. I think she's good. I think she's smart. I think she's aggressive. She's 58, but she seems to me acting 38. No, you know what? She made a face when I said she's 58, and here's why. Eventually, an employer is going to see you, and this I tell to all my older job seekers. Hiding your age is not a good idea. Yes, you're going to get more interviews, but the employer who wants a 20-something is going to reject you later anyway. Better to sell your age as a plus, like you said, your experience, etc., than try to hide it, and then it looks like you've tried to hide it.
Right.
So she's a great 58. She's somebody who's worth at least interviewing, if not hiring. So if you would like to do a job interview with her right here on KELW, that's cool. Or if you have a question or comment for her, the phone number here at Work with Marty Nemco, 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. And now let's go to the phones. What's your question or comment for Linda? It is your turn on the air. Hello.
Hello.
Yeah.
Hi. I actually work as a recruiter.
Uh-huh.
And I'm 62,
uh-huh.
And I have to say, I really think that going to the big companies at Linda's age, or at my age for that matter, is a mistake. I think it's unrealistic, because I think there's like an organic thing where people in their 30s, it's hard for them to be working with someone who's subordinate and feels like their aunt or uncle. It's just like an awkward thing organically, and I wish it wasn't true, but I think it is.
I think you're right. Remember, she said, though, she wants to focus on these micro-lending companies, which are hardly big, mature companies.
Well, let me finish, please. Let me finish.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing is, I think Linda really needs to get onto LinkedIn.
She said she did. You weren't listening. She said that she's very active on LinkedIn.
Okay, awesome. You're right. I didn't hear that part. The other thing is about the.
By the way, what would you tell her to do on LinkedIn for our listener, not maybe just for Linda? What would you say is the savviest, non-obvious way to make the most of LinkedIn?
I think a really smart thing is to, first of all, to network as much as possible. Like if you can get up above, that magic 500 connections number, I think that looks really good because it really shows that you're really plugged into the industries that you're interested in.
I disagree.
In.
I think when you have got more than 500, you're spending too much time networking. You're emphasizing sizzle over steak. I think it's much more important to have a quality connections, but more important than that, if you're going to use LinkedIn, it's what you do when you write a wonderful email to people who are in LinkedIn doing a great job. I think it's a net minus to have too many connections.
Well, I disagree with you. I think that's not true. Also, though, I think a really important thing on LinkedIn is to really do really detailed descriptions of what you've been doing mm-hmm. in your previous jobs and mm-hmm. stuff. So your skills are really, really clear. It's also really important to get recommendations from people that have worked with you in your previous jobs.
I agree. Before you go on, it is really good to describe what you've done well because today for recruiters especially, the profile you have on LinkedIn is the modern day resume. I also agree about the recommendations. They have to be great because everybody's got recommendations and everybody can get two or three. You need to have 5 to 10 really off the charts recommendation for it to stand out among the rest of them. Do you agree with
I
that?
I agree.
Okay.
And the other thing is that I think it's really important that you demonstrate that the applications that you're working with are the current applications. So whatever it is that you're doing, like she was saying, QuickBooks was something that she had worked with. I think it's really important to list those things so that people see that you're working with the same applications that they're working with, and you're not going to have to be trained in those things.
Agree.
Which is often a fear with older candidates.
Good point.
The last thing I want to say is just about the thing about fronting that you're better at using an application than you may actually be. I think the key there is to know yourself. Because some people learn applications really, really quickly. They're really good at it.
Good point.
And other people, like myself, I'm not good at that.
Right.
I have to be careful, and I don't oversell myself in terms of applications because there's going to be a curve there that I want them to know about.
That's precise. Again, that's something she said earlier. We had a good long discussion about that, she and I, here on 5 minutes ago, which was because she knows she's so fast at learning those things.
Oh, you're right. I missed that part, Marty. I apologize.
Okay. Anyway, your points are well taken. Our lines are lighted up, so I'm going to thank you for the call, unless there's something urgent you want to say.
I just want to say, lastly, the more she can work over the phone and provide great service to people that will do great recommendations for her, I think that's the key when you're an older, candidate for jobs.
Thank you.
And we certainly did talk about, her using her phone skills and being able to work remotely. So all good points, somewhat have been discussed already, but good points. Let's go back to the phones. Welcome to Work with Marty, Linda Seabright. What's your question or comment for Linda?
Is it you?
It's
me?
Hi.
Oh, good. Oh, hi. Hey, Marty, this is Barbara. And hi, Linda, this is Barbara.
Hi.
In Marin and San Rafael, actually, right by the farmer's market. I want to give you just some ideas based on what I heard. Hopefully, I won't be repeating stuff you've covered. But if you're saying you are interested in microlending in that area, my encouragement would be for you to expand upon that because the nonprofit world of philanthropy in Marin is really strong.
Ooh, true.
And given your research and your energy, research skills and your energy, your comment made me think of a couple people I've spoken to, and I'm a journalist, and microfinancing, there's so many people doing nonprofit work internationally based. And as I said, the one thing, the Marin Community Foundation is here, and who do they support, and who supports them? Conversely, as a writer myself, I noticed that on simplyhired.com, when you start searching in the nonprofit world and marketing, there are just so many companies that need those kind of skills.
Fabulous caller. Great call.
And you're reminding me, there's the Buck Foundation, as you say, the Marin Community Foundation. And
go up to Sonoma and, think of Sonoma. I mean, the things that I've been hearing, they're wealthy people and they've organized and there's nonprofits and they're doing that stuff. I have one other comment. So you're 57. I relate. I'm on that side of 50. Financially, given what you said your skills are, I'm in a little bit better position, but if I had your skills, what I would do after I work for a nonprofit or the people that donate to the nonprofits, you know, I mean, you know, after I explored that world, I would get a house in foreclosure. I mean, on my block, there'd be three options. Because I don't understand short sales. I don't understand banks. You might be able to crack that and with a smaller down payment after a couple of years, get a house, and they all need rehabbing. And I think everything is going up.
Oh, that gives me a headache just to think about it.
I think we've hit the bottom. I think if you could get a house at prices that we have not seen since the 80s or the 90s, you know, and then in 5 years, whatever, if you can understand and deal with a bank short sale and then sell it, you will be fine.
God bless you, Barbara.
Thanks very much for the call. You know, there is a phrase, I loved her comment about generalizing outward from the microfinance, because the same thing that would make you make microfinance appealing to you would be many different kinds of nonprofits, especially international, because you love to travel and there's something exotic about that.
And I speak two languages, three languages.
Fabulous. Okay. But I will see, there is a saying in investing that has long been true. It is never catch a falling knife. That means when things are going down, you do not try to buy because you think, oh, yeah, it's so low it can come back up. Because generally, objects in motion tend to stay in motion in the same direction. We have not seen an increase in housing prices. And so, especially if you're broke, you know, yes, the government tends to provide a cushion no matter how bad your judgment is. There's modifications, there's workouts, etc. But 4 million people have lost their home to foreclosure, even despite all the modifications since in the last 4 years. So I do not think that's a smart use of your time. I love the idea, however, of trying to use your phone skills to sell your accounting ability to various nonprofits that are Marin-based or otherwise, especially international ones, using your three languages. Does that make sense?
It does.
Okay. Let's take one more call, and then I'm going to thank you for being my guest. So welcome to work with... first of all, I'll give out the phone number. I want to transition. So now I want you to call... Not for a question for Linda, but if you would like what I normally do on this show, which is a 3-minute career makeover or workover, you are unhappy with any aspect of your work life, either because you don't have a work life or you're unhappy with the one you have, self-employed, employed by others, whatever. I usually can give you at least a baby step forward, if not a giant step. The phone number here for a 3-minute career makeover on Work with Marty Nemko, 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. And now let's go to the phones. What is your question or comment for Linda? It is your turn on the air. Hello. Are you still there? I guess. Are you still there? You're gone. Okay. So I will just give you one more last question. Now, I want you to think back on the 38 minutes you've been interviewed on this show. Is there one thing you either want to reiterate or one new point that you'd say, darn it, I wish I would have said that on the air to the listeners of KELW and Work with Marty Nemko? What would be the one thing you'd want to say or emphasize, reemphasize?
Do not be discouraged. Let me state that in a more positive way. You know, affirm that you can have a great job. Don't say, oh, I can't get into that because it takes, you know, 5 years of study and da-da-da. Just go for it. Just absolutely go for it. I don't want to be, again, cliche and say go for your passion, but if you're interested in music, go, and you always wanted a music job, God darn it, go apply for a music job. And I guarantee you, call me, you can quote me on this, that within 6 months you'll have a paying job in the music industry. Huh.
Okay. So, dear listeners, do you want to give out your phone number or email in case somebody wants to interview you for a potential job?
Sure. LindaSebright@gmail.
But first, so Linda Sebright, I'll spell it in a minute. But first of all, I'm going to do the 15-second pitch for Linda, and you tell me if this is the way it should be. Okay. Here is a woman. If you are looking for somebody who's got accounting skills, made most of her life, and she does no CPA, she has no college degree, forget about it if you want that. But if you're looking for somebody who's got some accounting skills and is nimble, she's intellectually nimble, she learns fast, she's very personable, but she is impatient. She's, if you're looking for some super laid-back person, it's the wrong person. But if you're looking for a high-energy person who's quick, but very personable, and who like to, and you are especially in a nonprofit and based in Marin, I think she's worth chatting with, if not actually hiring. I don't know her well enough to say she's worth hiring. But just, you could email her at Linda Seabright. That's L-I-N-D-A, the normal way you spell Linda. And Seabright, the way you would think it would be. C like the ocean, C, and bright like the bright smile on her face right now. LindaSeabright@gmail.com. Is that a fair summary of the soundbite for you?
It is, except I would add that I'm funny, too.
Oh, yeah, well, clearly, yes, that's absolutely true. So, okay, thank you very much, Linda Seabright, for being my guest on Work with Marty Nemco.
Marty, it's such a pleasure. What a doll you are.
Thank you. Well, and you're welcome to hang around for the last 20 minutes before the show. Okay, so I'll give out the phone number again. If you would like a 3-minute career makeover to help with your career, the phone number, 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. This is a good time to call before the lines get packed. Let's go to the phones. Welcome to the show. What's on your mind? Hello? It is your turn on the air. Hello, are you there? I guess that person is gone. So let us go to the next line, and I'll just wait for that call to clear. And welcome to Work with Marty Nemco. It's your turn on the air. How can I help?
Hi, my name is Lee.
Hi, Lee.
And I just listened to the interview you had with Linda, and I wanted to make a comment to her, but also about myself, because I can totally relate to Linda as the artist type. Mm-hmm. I consider myself an artist. I'm a graduate gemologist, but I had a very long career in the Merchant Marines because my first love is adventure and travel. And I also traveled, spent a lot of money, didn't think about the future too much because that's the type we are.
That's
We're in the here and now.
Right.
But I've also been able to expand my career in many different fields, bookkeeping, whatever I wanted to do, I was able to do. Now I'm 64, which I can't believe myself.
I know, me too. I'm getting in that category too.
I have to keep reminding myself, I'm 64.
Right.
And I'm starting to feel the age discrimination when looking for work. So, one thing that I have discovered is that the type of people that we are, the artists, we don't think about money like most people. And but one advantage to that is our independence. And I found that the healthcare industry needs people like us, and it's also a good way to be of service, which is what I believe is important in life, especially at our age when I feel so privileged in my life to have everything I ever wanted. And now I can look for a job in healthcare. Not necessarily, I'm not the studious type, but you can get a CNA, Certified Nurse's Assistant, be able to help people in physical need, and end up in a beautiful home, taking care of a sweet person that really appreciates you, make a decent living, and have a roof over your head, and security. I'm not talking about so much financial security, but yes, as long as you take care of your health and you're able to be of service in the world, you will always be okay.
I would suggest that that's really good advice. I'm wondering if you might find the combination of your desire for adventure, your Merchant Marine experience, and your artist self by working on a cruise ship. Either a
I have worked on cruise ships for the last 20 years.
There you go.
My career now, and people tell me I have the best job in the world. I do jewelry trunk shows on cruise ships.
Exactly, because you're a gemologist. Exactly. That's what I was going to
Because I'm a gemologist, yes.
So, right.
But,
so
know, that lifestyle gets very, very old.
Then what I would suggest you do, because that is such a nice little narrow niche, is that you train a young person to do that. You know, we know that the margins on those trunk shows on cruise ships is enormous. And what you need to be doing is you need to start a business that translates what you've learned about the art of doing a successful trunk show. Because remember, you know, also being older is really a plus, because who's got the money to go on these cruises, let alone the ones who are going to buy jewelry? It's old people. And therefore, you need to go and find a young person who's not too young, probably in her 40s, who's single and would like to meet a guy. Or, you know, a guy would like to meet her, because what better place to meet somebody than a cruise ship? Somebody who's single, who's maybe whose kid is just going off to college and they've got empty nest syndrome and she's by herself. She's free to go. You train this person, and it's got to be a great salesperson more than anything. They don't need gemology knowledge. That's ridiculous. That's not necessary. Not ridiculous, but it's not necessary. A salesperson who's absolutely ebullient and who's free and would like to go and spend those months at a time on the cruise ship, and you take a piece of the action. It's your business. Does that make sense?
No, it doesn't, because for one thing, the people that are going on cruise ships now don't necessarily have money, because they're practically giving away the cruise ship fares. And older people, they do not buy jewelry. They have their jewelry that they've purchased most of their life, and now they're trying to get rid of it. That's why the estate buying business is so good. Okay. Everybody's trying to sell things that they don't wear anymore. And as far as the young people aboard ship, everybody wants my job. They get jealous when I come on board and they say, well, why is she here? I could do that. They could, except that they don't have the graduate gemologist certificate. And I tell them that. I said, if you want to be taken seriously in this field, get your certificate. It's easy. You can do it online. And it's a fabulous career, especially for women.
I will revise the, in light of what you said, because clearly I don't know everything about gemology in cruise ships, but I think that while it may be that you've taught me something that I didn't know, that the older people are not buying jewelry, they're getting rid of jewelry, makes good sense. But I do not accept that the people who are in their 30s and 40s, who are going on cruise ships, especially sometimes a single person who's going to go and buy some piece of jewelry for the girl he just met on the cruise ship, I can't believe it's a moribund field. So you to find somebody in her 30s and 40s and train her to go on high-end, you know, we're not talking about Carnival. We are talking here about Seabourn and all the rest of the high-end ones, or the ones that the sweet spot, the, you know, where the younger people can go, the celebrities and the princess lines. And to find one person like that who's willing to go on those cruise ships and you train her, at least it's a good side source of income as you're 64. It's nice to have that little cushion as you look for the CNA job, because you say, as you well know, CNA jobs pay $10 to $12 an hour. So it's a nice way to supplement your income without you having to do any work for it, other than as you get older, feeling you can feel like you're transgenerative. You can pass on what you've learned over your lifetime to the next generation. Does that make sense?
Okay, well, I am working with a young girl who was on board ship and representing one of the high-end jewelers, and very personable girl and a good salesperson. And the problem is that she's already on board. She already knows what to do. The problem is getting into the cruise ship business office.
Well,
the person who hires me wants to know that that person, first of all, can be hired by an American company. This girl happens to be Swedish, and she's excellent. And I've told her, you need to get your GG, graduate gemologist certificate. That will show everybody.
I'm going to interrupt you because all our lines are lighted up. I got it. Your challenge is, that's where you will earn your money. You need to be able to, on the phone, either yourself or train her, or somebody else, to be so persuasive that they convince that business officer, the cruise ship, to go and hire us. Because they're hiring somebody. Why shouldn't it be somebody who you've trained and supervised? Anyway, thank you very much for the call. Thanks for calling Work with Marty Nemco. Back to the phones. Welcome to Work with Marty Nemco. It's your turn on the air. How can I help? Hello.
Hello.
Hi, it's you.
It's me?
Yes. What's your question or comment?
Listening to Linda, I'm in exactly the same position, albeit I've been an artist all my life, or in the arts all my life, and also self-employed all those years, although I was able to travel all over Europe and the USA and the Caribbean with the work that I did on somebody else's dime. I personally, of course, did not make a lot of money. And I'm 58 years old, and I've been unemployed for 2 years. And in talking with everybody, the main thing is the resume situation. How do I produce a one-page resume of 30 years of work doing various things in different companies as an entrepreneur?
Here is the answer. You don't. The resume is a sales tool. And I'm well aware that some employers will automatically reject you if you don't submit a resume, and instead you list the three, or you write a cover letter listing the three or four best things you bring to the table for that particular employer. But when day is done, you are going to get a job faster if you play what I call the hide the resume game.
Yeah, I was hearing that earlier. Yeah.
You use the phone to explain what you bring to the table. You don't apply for advertised jobs. If you apply for an advertised job, you're dead, because the employer is going to screen out any applicant who does not have the perfect resume, let alone a resume. So what you need to do is get in early in the lifespan of a job opening. That is, just like I was telling Linda, make a list of the 20 or 30 nonprofits that you'd most want to work for, and speak to the CEO and explain what you bring to the table, and they will either create a project job. Most of them will ignore you, but out of the 20, one is at least, it's more likely to create a position for you or give you a temp job if you go and pitch yourself that way before a job is advertised than if you wait until later in the lifespan of a job and it's advertised when he's going to get or she's going to get hundreds or dozens of applications. You play the hide the resume game. And if he says, please submit your resume, you submit what I call a qualifications brief, which is a bulleted list of the main things that you bring to the table that would impress that employer. Yes, some employers will say no, but when day is done, you will get your job faster by playing the hide the resume game than by simply answering ads and sending in your resume. Make sense?
You know, that's very interesting, because my entire life, that's exactly what I did. I saw a company that I felt had a need that they weren't fulfilling, and I cold called the president or CEO of the company, and the next day I had the job.
That's right.
The Parker Meridian Hotel in New York City. I was doing uniforms for them the next day.
That's the game. Now, from a cosmic ethical standpoint, I'm not a big fan of that, because it's unfair to the employer who's got to take all these calls from unsolicited phone calls from wannabes. So the way in which I feel like I can strike the balance is to leave a very brief voicemail after hours, so he's not forced to have this long conversation. And if he doesn't respond, you've taken no more of the boss's time than if he was stopped on the street by somebody asking for directions. So be concise, respectful of his time, make a brief 15 or 20 second phone call, and that to me strikes the balance between going after what you want and being a pain in the butt. Make sense?
Makes absolute sense, yes.
Okay, thanks a lot for calling Work with Marty Nemko. Back to the phones. Welcome to the show. It's your turn on the air, and how can I help?
Hi, is it me?
Yes, it is.
Okay. So I'm really fortunate in that I have a job that I enjoy very much.
Mm-hmm. What is it? What do you do?
I'm a computer software instructor.
Okay.
And I really love teaching, and I really love doing that.
Great.
And then I'm sort of at this point where I'm pondering a change, and I'm not sure if I want to open this up or not, which is that I've been in a couple of meetings at work, and I feel like managers and upper-level people are sort of looking for contributions from me. And I'm actually, even though I don't appear it, I'm actually somewhat shy. And so I'm hesitant, and I'm concerned about appearing that I lack confidence, and basically that people are going to sort of go forward in the company and kind of move along around me and be happy that I'm in my little niche doing my thing.
I want to make sure I understand. So you're right now you're working for companies as a trainer in software.
Correct.
But you've developed a good enough reputation that higher-ups are asking you for more substantive contributions in meetings, and you feel like you've been a little hesitant and not confident enough to make those contributions, and therefore you're afraid that they're going to look past you and hire other people, but you'd like to gain the confidence and or competence so that you can make those contributions to those higher-up in response to those higher-up questions?
I'm not exactly, well, certainly I'd love to be more confident. Who wouldn't? But I'm actually really happy with what I'm doing. So
okay.
I think part of it is that I have this uncertainty, like I sort of don't really want to rock the boat and bring on more things that might be a big stretch for me.
So cosmically, I mean, there is the American way is that you up is the only way. You've got to rise to your level of incompetence. If you were the wise goddess within you, would you say that you really should be grateful for what you have and make clear to the higher-ups that you are not upwardly aspiring, offer the help that you can in response to their questions, but be, not try to play that game of upward mobility, or should you gain more skills so that you can be more responsive to those higher up questions, or work harder to prepare for responses to those questions so that you can stay in the favor of those folks? Which is a better approach for you?
A better approach would be slightly.
Tell me, and when you say be slightly, tell me what you mean by that.
Well, I don't feel like I'm like I have really high ambitions, and I'm really happy with what I'm doing.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't want to feel somewhat intimidated and held back, and like if I have my ideas, I keep them to myself. Mm-hmm. Or
well, let's play shrink with you for just a moment. There can be two basic reasons why you would keep your ideas to yourself. One is quietly, you really don't think they're that rationally. You rationally assess that those ideas really aren't that great. But the other approach, the other option is that they really are very worthy, at least of consideration, and you just somehow, there's something in your psyche that irrationally keeps you from doing it. Is your reluctance to share your ideas rationally based or irrationally based?
I'm going to say it's like not really a clear either, or it's sort of a gray area.
So then normally if it's gray and it's unclear, tell me the kind of input that they want from you, and I'll tell you what I think I would do in your situation.
One was input on hiring someone. We were doing interviews together, and I was really happy to be in the interview.
Mm-hmm.
And to be considered, but I felt like I was sort of handling the interview in a rote sort of way, rather than
an intuitive way,
rather than being assertive and taking a leadership sort of a.
So with that as an example, I mean, for me, what I would do is I would at least make sure, you know, it is an art to interview somebody. Yes, some of it is your intuitions and all that, but interviews are notoriously invalid. So what I would be doing is I would, next time I were asked to sit in an interview process, I would read articles on best practices in employee interviews so that I had the knowledge base at my disposal so that I could be more savvy and therefore more legitimately confident about asking a certain question or then rendering an opinion. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does.
Okay.
It's helpful. Can I ask you one more question in a little bit of a different direction?
Very brief, because we have a total of 1 minute before I have
okay.
to say goodbye.
It is that I work for people who are younger than I, the managers are younger than I am.
Mm-hmm.
And I am a person who is pretty self-taught and didn't really have mentorship. So one of my considerations in moving forward is to ask for that from a couple of these folks.
Yes.
And I just don't, you know, because I'm they're much younger, I'm just not sure if that's a good idea or if it would be
absolutely
awkward.
It's great. I love that idea. There's no, you know, in fact, younger people are often intimidated by older people. And I'm a columnist at The Atlantic, and my boss is 27 years old, but a very bright guy whom I really like, and he knows things as a younger person and what the sensibilities of a younger person that I don't have. I don't explicitly ask to be my mentor. I say, you know, I'm older than you are, and maybe I'm not as in touch with what the younger readers are going to want in your section. Could we talk a little bit about that? He welcomes that. It brings it right on the table. That's what I'd encourage you to do.
All right. Thank you very much.
Okay, and thank you.
All right. Bye.
And that is Work with Marty Nemco for this week. I want to thank my board operator, Joanne Marr, and I want to thank my guest, Linda Seabright, for being a really fine guest and listener to KALW. Thank you very much. And by the way, if you were listening earlier and you suddenly say, you know, maybe I do want to think about hiring her, her email address, she's an accountant person who wants to work in a nonprofit. She lives in Marin. Very energetic. Older, but not a young person in her 50s. Her email address is Linda Seabright, Linda, LindaSeabright, @gmail.com. And, of course, I thank all of you for listening and calling in. Please join me again next Sunday at 11. There'll be no guests. You're stuck with me for the whole hour. I will share my favorite new work-related tips and ideas. Plus, you can call in for a 3-minute workover. Until next Sunday, this is Marty Nemco reminding you that we find comfort among those who agree with us. Growth among those who don't.